Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today, we take a journey to Tucson, Arizona. We have our guest, Jeff Schuchart. Tell you a little bit about Jeff. From personal interest to profession, he relocated to the Tucson, Arizona area with his husband during the summer of 2014. I know you're thinking, you moved during the summer, especially in Tucson. He did and never looked back. They both grew up in Southeast Pennsylvania and had a timeline in mind to pick up and move, even though they knew no one in Tucson. Jeff always had a personal interest in real estate, and after retiring in 2016, he obtained his realtor license and joined Long Realty, the largest brokerage in Southern Arizona and part of the Berkshire Hathaway network. His background, he spent 30 years with VF Corporation, entirely in human resources. He has an undergraduate degree in fine arts and a master's in business administration from state and private universities in Pennsylvania. His husband, Bob, and himself find Tucson to be an amazing city with wonderful people, a diverse university town, city of gastronomy, culture, hiking, cycling, golfing, mountains everywhere, and a large gay community. What more would you want? He has volunteered most of his adult life and has found plenty of organizations to support here in their local community. He never tires of talking about Tucson and all it has to offer. Feel free to visit his website at Jeff's, that's J-E-F-F-S dot Long Realty, that's L-O-N-G-R-E-A-L-T-Y .com, or email him directly at jeffs@longrealty.com if he can answer any questions about their experiences. So welcome, Jeff, to the podcast. Thank you so much for coming. And I know our audience is eager to find out all about Tucson, Arizona.
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate the opportunity.
My pleasure. So, Jeff, tell our audience where you moved from. You said Pennsylvania, and why you decided on Tucson as far as all places to live, even in Arizona. Why Tucson?
Well, we moved from, as you said, Southeast Pennsylvania. We were in a suburb of a city called Reading, which, if you think of Reading Railroad on Monopoly, it's the same name. We were very close, if you will, to some major cities. We were about an hour from Philadelphia, about 2.5 to 3 from Baltimore and D.C., and another 2.5 from New York City. So it was a great location in terms of access to large cities. And we had this in the planning stages for a few years based on my projected retirement date. We had vacationed in Arizona a number of times, and the last 2 or 3 times were in Tucson and only in Tucson. And it's really a good question to ask why, how we picked Tucson. And it's ironic that you are creating not only podcasts, but have reached out to so many people via Zoom and have this great list of questions from yourself and from your listeners. And ironically, Bob and I really didn't ask a lot of questions. We liked the weather. We loved the geography. Tucson is surrounded by mountains, and we didn't ask those kinds of questions. And now looking back, I'm not sure why, but we have no regrets moving here. And once we made the decision, then each visit became a little more focused on places that we wanted to live, not the location. So we're extremely happy here, and we made the right decision.
That's great. Did you start just going vacationing to Tucson?
We did.
And we morphed into...
We focused just on Tucson in the latter stages of our trips out here. Our initial visit to Arizona was at the time I was probably getting 2 weeks vacation per year. So like many Americans on vacation, yes, you had to cram a lot of sightseeing into 1 week, but that was a long time ago. And the last few trips prior to moving were strictly here in Tucson.
Okay. So geographically speaking, can you tell the audience where Tucson is located within the state of Arizona?
Sure. It is in the southern area of the state. It's about, Phoenix is a large city, but it's about an hour and a half to 2 hours from Phoenix and their metro areas. If we drove to Scottsdale, it would probably be a 2 hour trip. If we went to the airport, which is on the southern side of the city, and Chandler, it would be about an hour and a half from our home. We're about 2 hours north of Bisbee, which is, we'll talk about, I'm sure, during our podcast. And I would guess about 75 miles from the border as the crow flies to Mexico.
So, yeah, you're pretty centrally located to pretty much everything. Yeah, we live in Phoenix, so it's really not that far.
It's not. And when you think about the southern end of the state, and I'm sure we'll talk about weather, Mark, but we're at a higher elevation than Phoenix is. So
right,
you're down in the valley, and we have so many mountains around us, so our elevation is a bit higher, even though we're in the southern part of the state. So no correlation between south and heat necessarily.
Right. So we'll talk about the climate now. So pretty much you might be a little bit cooler than Phoenix gets in the summer. Do you know how much cooler, actually?
We always have used the gauge of approximately 5 to 7 degrees cooler than Phoenix.
Sense. Yeah, so still the summers are very hot and dry.
No doubt, they are.
And you do have, again, you have monsoon season like we do.
We do, which officially starts, I believe, around July 1st and runs through September.
Yeah.
It's probably surprising to a lot of people that June is our hottest month versus July or August, which is probably warmer in many other states in the U.S. But June is our warmest month with lots of days at 100 or above. But that's what kicks off the monsoons, Mark. We need that heat in order to generate the energy to create those monsoon storms. So all that heat is generating during the month of June, and then come July, we're hoping we have a lot of storms and rain with it.
Yeah. It's so funny. When I moved here, I was like, wow, the people that live here, they really like rain. It's like I came from Florida for 4 years and I was just done with rain. It would rain every afternoon in the summer and you can count on downpours. And here it's like, yeah, everybody gets so excited and happy that it's going to rain. And they actually say when it's cloudy and rainy, look how beautiful it is out. So I get a kick out of that, which we actually really do need the rain.
We do. And from living so close that when we get those storms, it can be raining a half a mile from your home, but nothing where you live. So it's quite fascinating to see these storms roll in and they just have their path. And
yep,
just because it may say you're going to get rain, you may not get any. So, but we're always hopeful because we do.
Yes. Need. Do you get haboobs, dust storms?
We do not. The closest they come to us are along I-10. So for our listeners who don't know, I-10 runs right from Tucson to Phoenix, and that's where the haboobs will be. We've never had one here at all since we've lived here. It's the mountains that protect Tucson.
That's a good thing. Yeah, I'll never forget my first time actually in one. I was leaving work one day, and I had to walk to the light rail a couple of blocks because I took the light rail to work. And all of a sudden, the wind started blowing up, and then I saw this. I was like, what is that? And it was a cloud of dust. And I said, I better get back to work. Better take cover before. And it did pass. It took 10 minutes to pass, but... Yeah, you can't be
actually. It's actually a wall. It becomes a wall, and it's quite dangerous, especially if you're driving.
Yes, absolutely. So I took cover, and before you know it was gone, and I was on my merry way. But okay, so are there any quick getaways in the summer months for cooler weather, like in the mountains?
There are. Tucson is a snowbird city. First, so there are plenty of people who have two homes, people who have a home here for the rest of the year, and then they may go back to Minnesota or Colorado or Wisconsin or Washington State because they still maintain another residence there. There are quite a few people who only vacation here. They don't own a home during the winter season. So primarily January, February, March is the height of the snowbird season for people who travel here and then have a primary residence in another state. For those of us who live here year round, yes, there are plenty of places to go depending on how far you may want to travel. I'm sure we will talk about Bisbee, but Bisbee being 2 hours south is a much higher elevation than Tucson. So it can get very hot there, but at the same time, it's cooler generally. Then within about 3.5 hours to 4 hours, northeast of us are a few towns called Sholo and Pine Top and Lakeside. Those are in the White Mountains of Arizona. So it's probably about 15, 20 degrees cooler up there. Mm-hmm. It's very woodsy, if you will. And so some people have second homes up there. Other people just go up to visit. Bob and I spent the month of June in Santa Fe a couple of years ago, and it was just delightful because the weather was so nice.
Ooh. Oh, yeah.
And they have real grass, and the dog was very happy. Yeah. But Santa Fe is just a lovely place to visit. And so we just decided to rent a condo, bring the dog along, and we spent the month of June there. And Tucson is about 6 hours from San Diego. So you can be on the Southern California coast in a reasonable amount of time. And then there are still other towns and cities in Arizona that are much cooler. So Flagstaff, Mark.
Oh, yeah.
In the winter, they can get a lot of snow, but a lot of people go up to Flag, maybe Prescott. Prescott will still get warm, but Flagstaff is cooler. So there are plenty of choices, north, east, west, to go to that are much cooler in the summer months.
Yeah, that's the beauty of living here. You can have a quick getaway if you wanted to, a couple of hour drive and be in cooler weather. So in the summer and the rest of the year, besides the summer, is totally delightful. It's beautiful. It's like now I just stepped out on my terrace and I was just letting the sun hit my face. It's just beautiful out there.
Well, one of the things I'll add about the weather is that, and what we find just so appealing is that the rest of the year, typically, our temperature shift from daytime to night is 30 degrees.
It is.
So 90 degrees may sound warm or hot to our listeners, but it's going to be 60 at night. And once that sun goes down, it just cools off so quickly. And it's such an arid climate that 90 degrees feels great.
Doesn't feel like 90.
No, it
right?
does not feel like 90.
it feels like
we don't 80. We don't have the humidity that you were accustomed to in Florida. So.
Right, exactly. So does Tucson get like in the mornings now? Like we go out really early. If we get up really early, it's in the low 30s. This week, it has been really unseasonably cold in the morning. So it's been low to mid 30s. Now I think today was like 38 or 37. Mm-hmm. And then it warms up, of course, during the day. And now it's what it could be. Let's see. It's 63 right now here. So do you experience the same?
It's an unusually long stretch of cool nights.
That's
it just
what I
seems
think.
Like there are more, but that's okay. I have my citrus covered and some fragile plants because they can die due to the freeze at night. But we're approaching that point, Mark, where, and I'm talking to you about it because you live in Phoenix.
I know.
But we're approaching that point. We're on that cusp of some warmer days and you can just.
Yes. Right. Yeah. So, right. Yeah. We were discussing, my husband and I were discussing, it's like since we've been here, we haven't had this much of a cold snap in the morning. But as they all say, it's coming.
Yes. Exactly.
Okay. So, is living in an LGBTQ community important to you? If so, does Tucson have any, or is everything pretty much live and let live and they don't care?
It's not important to us in the sense that we want to live in an area that is only LGBTQ. Bob and I we've been together 32 years, and we've always enjoyed having friends who are straight, gay, diverse in terms of
right.
color and ethnicity. That's how we like to live our lives. And moving here 8.5 years ago, we landed in a neighborhood we knew nothing about, but it's a neighborhood of professionals, and most of us are from somewhere else and not Arizona, and it's delightful. And there are not neighborhoods per se that are predominantly gay in Tucson. I really feel like we're spread all over the metro area from east to west and north and central and downtown. There are some events. There's a Wednesday happy hour, LGBTQ. And most of the people that attend are people who live downtown because the venues are always near downtown. So there are other examples of that, Mark, where there's a monthly event that moves around in more diverse areas. But and then there are soiree groups that meet, and I think there's one in the east and one in the west. And so I really feel like, for our listeners, I can't compare us to like a Wilton Manors in Fort Lauderdale. I mean, that's not Tucson. We're all over the place. And so getting back to your specific question for Bob and I, we have so many friends here, both gay and straight, and it just developed that way. And it always has for us. We don't really want to be in a community where it's just
exclusively gay people.
Gay people.
Yeah. And I definitely understand that. But just for our listening audience also, just to let you know that Tucson gets a 100% HRC rating year in and year out every year from the HRC. So very open-minded, very gay friendly as far as LGBT rights are concerned.
And we actually have a LGBTQ Chamber of Commerce.
Yes.
That hosts monthly breakfasts with different speakers. They also have a foundation where they focus on youth, LGBTQ youth. I volunteer for an organization that supports people living with HIV and AIDS. And then there is a secondary organization here in Tucson that's more robust than the one I volunteer for in terms of getting funding from the state and doing a broader amount of service, such as testing and so forth. So there are plenty of resources here, social, educational, medical, and otherwise. But yeah, you know, it's just we have a large gay community, and one of the things that, of course, we like is that we always say we're a blue dot in a red state, although the red has changed, if not blue, to purple. So
right.
A lot of changes politically, but when we got here, it's definitely a blue dot. Blue dot. So
yeah.
We have lots of liberal people, and I attribute that too to just. We're part of a large university town. The University of Arizona is here.
Yes.
So the employees that are there, the students that are there, and we have a big tech corridor here as well. So you have a lot of educated people coming in, and maybe it's not fair to stereotype and say, well, because of that, they're liberal, because they're not all liberal, but I think it certainly helps.
Yep, absolutely. Do you live in Oro Valley?
We do. And Oro Valley it's a separately incorporated town. It's on the north and west side of the city. So for us to get to you in Phoenix, Mark, we just jump on I-10, and we're on the north side. And that's why I said the airport being on the south side of Phoenix, it's a pretty easy drive for us.
Yep. And one of these days, we're definitely going to take a drive up to Tucson or down to Tucson.
Yes.
Visit you guys. And visit our friends as well.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So are there any gay bars in Tucson?
Two that I can think of.
Okay.
Certainly not many. One is downtown, and I believe the majority of the people who go there are young. And then there's another one that I can think of that has been around a long, long time. It's probably a leather bar way back when. I don't know what it is now, but I don't know if this is true. I'm sure there are plenty of cities that have huge gay communities that have a lot of bars. I mean, you look at Palm Springs or someplace like that. But
it's all gay.
But I do believe that. With access to social media and people just meet people in other ways now compared
on
to when
apps.
You and I were growing up and didn't
right.
have the internet.
We didn't have the apps.
Exactly. And so do you have to have all those bars like we used to? And again, there are plenty of other places that have a lot. We do not.
Okay. So you said Tucson has a pride, right? Does Tucson have a pride festival?
We do, and ours is in October, and that's simply because June is just way too hot. And there's also a senior pride group here, and they have their own event. So, and again, we have a parade. Is it New York City? Is it? It's not. But we certainly celebrate it, and just in different ways.
This year, I went to Bisbee Pride for the first time. It was interesting. It wasn't what I thought. A lot of people from Phoenix goes there and attends Bisbee Pride, and I didn't really know what to expect, but it was very nice. We had a great time, great weekend, but the parade itself was nothing spectacular. It was pretty short.
We were there once.
So tell us, do you want to talk about Bisbee a little bit? So you said it was 2 hours from you?
It is 2 hours from here. Bisbee is an old copper mining town, and the mines still exist, and they actually offer tours. There is and if I believe I have the correct name, Copper Queen Hotel, yes, which supposedly is haunted. Mm-hmm. Bisbee is an interesting town that we love to visit, and it's very hilly. It's small, as we spoke about earlier, and the weather is different. The temperatures are cooler because of the elevation, but it's very eclectic. It has some nice restaurants, some, I'll just say, saloons instead of bars. And art galleries, and it's a fun place to go and spend a weekend or spend one night or just go for the day.
I actually know a couple that just sold their house in Phoenix and moved permanently to Bisbee.
I actually have a friend from high school. He and his wife have been RVing and also working full-time out of the RV. They've been driving around the country for, I'm sure I don't have the right number, but at least 7 years, might be 10. And they have landed in Bisbee, and they decided they were going to sell the RV. And he said, of all the places that they visited around the country, they fell in love with Bisbee. So they're building a home there.
That's so interesting. Huh. Yeah, that is very interesting. So tell us, you said you have many friends since you've lived there. Is it easy making friends, or is it a little cliquish, or how do you go about, are there meetup groups? How do you go about meeting people, just from meeting a neighbor who introduces you to another neighbor, or?
Well, I might be more social than some other people, but I'll certainly share how I met people. We did join meetup groups as soon as we got here, and we joined hiking. We joined an LGBTQ group. We joined one called East Coasters in the West. And there are, as you know, other people know that are in larger cities, the meetup groups are a great way to meet people and kind of fuel your interests, because there are groups focusing on everything from investment clubs to foreign language speaking, and you name it, it's probably there. So we met some friends on hikes. And again, this goes back to what we spoke about before, gay and straight. And we joined an LGBTQ group, which that meetup group, I'm sure, has disbanded by now, but we met some people that we are still very, very good friends with. And what I want to say is, in this, and so to our listeners, when you meet people through those groups, you find your way. You're not going to become close friends with nearly everyone that you meet, but you know exactly what your interests are as an individual or as a couple. And we found it pretty easy to meet people that way. As I mentioned earlier, I volunteer. So people on my volunteer organization and committee have become friends. And the one thing that has been so nice for us is that we came from the Northeast, and you lived there at one time, Mark. So,
oh, yeah, mostly all my life.
I mean, we had neighbors I never met in 8 years. And the Northeast, I'm not going to disparage people who live in the Northeast. I lived there. It's just different here. People are extremely friendly. And so I'm making, just so the listening audience knows, I'm making a comparison between what our experience has been since we've been here and what we left. And that is, we were not used to walking in every business and people saying hello to us. And I'm sure it's not true of every business here, but we just find the population here to be extremely friendly. And I went to some board meetings because we live in an HOA organized community, and we met people that way. And before we knew it, a couple was inviting us for dinner, and they invited their other neighbors for dinner. So we became a group of eight who would just, again, pre-COVID, move around from one house to the next. And we have a lot of really close friends in the community. And so there are a lot of ways to meet people here, and those are just a few examples.
And speaking of population, Tucson, is it the Tucson Metro that's around 550,000?
Actually, I think it's probably closer to a million when you look.
Oh, is it the Metro?
Well, we're including Oro Valley, which is a separately incorporated town. Marana is a separately incorporated town. So it may not be quite a million, but it's closer to 1 million when you include all those areas.
That's a pretty strong population.
It is. But perfect, Mark.
Yes, perfect. Of course it is. Of course. Yeah, it's. And then through your real estate business, you've also, I'm sure, met people. You've met two of my friends.
Yes, absolutely.
That I know from back east and that I worked with, had the pleasure of working with.
I think
and now you guys are friends.
Yes, and I think that's the nature of real estate. And one thing that probably a lot of other realtors would agree that you meet so many great people and some of them become close friends. And part of that is, well, part of it is because I have had gay clients, but I've had plenty of straight clients, but we became close friends with both groups. And it's been so nice.
You know? Yeah.
It's so different than living where we lived. Sometimes, I mean, we like to be home as well, but it's fair to say that I don't know that we have enough time on the calendar to get together with all these people as often as we want to. And that's a good thing.
It is.
I'm really pleased.
It's a good problem to have.
It is. I'm pleased that I can say we have so many, not just acquaintances, but really nice people to socialize with.
Yeah.
We just can't. And the last 2-3 years have been certainly a different experience for all of us, but.
Yeah. And that's one of the most important things too. It's very important to build community wherever you live. And the fact that you can find many, many friendly people is important too in a place. Like you said, back east in New York. Yeah. Did I have friends? Yeah, I had friends, but there's so many people that it's just overwhelming.
Sure.
And here it's a little bit more homey.
It sure is. We like it.
Yeah. So tell us about the local economy. Since you're in real estate, tell us a little bit about rental properties, what they're going for, 2-bedroom, 2-bath, condos, homes on the market right now, and single family homes. Give us some sort of idea. I know they're probably all over the place. And recently, of course, the market's been up. Now the Phoenix market is on its way down. So give us a little idea about that.
Where do I start? I would say that if you look at the average home price here recently, or might be looking at 2022 results, but the average home price was around maybe $379,000, excuse me. The median is around $344,000. But as you said, there's plenty above and there's plenty below. That number obviously increased during COVID when we saw this real estate market just go crazy.
Crazy.
And not just here. And our listening audience would agree. I mean, it happened almost everywhere. Rents have gone up a lot. I looked at, just out of curiosity, prior to the podcast, I just looked at Tucson compared to Fort Lauderdale, because I know that some of the listening audience either live there or maybe are considering that as a retirement destination. I also looked at Seattle, which is a much larger city. So Tucson, in comparison, like when you look at residential real estate, when you look at restaurant costs, when you look at cost of living, I mean, Tucson was lower than either of those cities in those categories. That's not to say that locally rents are inexpensive? I don't know the answer to that question. I mean, I would venture to guess that you're going to pay probably $900 to $1,000 a month for a one bedroom here. And I'm not saying I'm exact or that it's that it's accurate, but I mean, I helped someone in the last 6 months get into a manufactured home because her rent was just about doubling, and the developers who bought the property where she lived for years were turning it into luxury apartments, so they were going to raise the rent, and the rents keep going up. So is it affordable compared to a lot of other areas? It sure is, but it depends on what you're comparing it to. So
right, and I think it's more affordable than Phoenix area.
It is. Now, one interesting thing is that property taxes in Phoenix are much less than Tucson.
Oh, that's interesting.
So, yeah, it may not be that the rents may be higher in Phoenix than they are in Tucson, but if you're owning and you're paying property taxes here, they're going to be higher than they are in Phoenix.
Why is that? I would just wonder why.
I think they have the big infrastructure in Phoenix, and we don't here, and I can't pinpoint it exactly, but it is. You would think it would be the opposite, perhaps, but it's not.
Okay. So, all right, that gives us a general idea. How about utility bills, electric bills, water bills, gas bills?
Again, I think it's all relative, Mark, in terms of where people live. We find it to be pretty affordable here in terms of utilities. I mean, again, if you have, you're in a condo, right, Mark? So
yeah.
We're in a 3,300 square foot house. So we're probably going to pay much more in every utility group just because the house
right.
is larger. You also have to consider, when you live in Tucson, are you in the city of Tucson? You could be in an unincorporated area of Pima County. You could live in Oro Valley, which is separate. And so it just depends on where you live. But overall, I would say, and I don't have a good comparison to other places around the country, but I would venture to guess Tucson's pretty affordable. And honestly, being in real estate, a lot of people say, well, everyone's coming from California, aren't they? And it's partially true because mm-hmm. you could sell their home in California and come here and get a property twice the size for the same
cash.
Or lower price. So it's you have to balance all that. And certainly not everyone is coming here from California. But for the Californians, it's probably looking extremely affordable. But for other areas, I mean, I've represented lots of real estate clients who have come from Chicago, from Nebraska, from Michigan, from Minnesota. And so it's pretty affordable place. And when you look at the price of gas, fuel for the car, ours is one of the lowest in the country and has been.
Yeah, ours is pretty up there.
So we all joke when we're
come
going
down, but
someone just asked me the other day, where should I get gas before I drive across the border to California? My answer was Yuma, Arizona, if you're going to San Diego.
Yep, absolutely. Does Tucson have an arts and culture scene? Can you get your fix of theater in Tucson if you wanted to? Or what is that, museums?
Well, I would debate anyone who said they couldn't get their fix of any of those things. I would describe it as robust, vibrant. There's so many things to do here. And part of that is because we have the university here. So there's a theater on campus that they have things all year, but Broadway in Tucson. And so there's Dear Evan Hansen is going to be there in the next couple of months. I went to see Harry Connick perform with his orchestra there a few months ago. Then there are smaller independent theater groups that do some wonderful productions. And There are art galleries. There are everywhere. It's I think it's a haven for artists as well. There's just so much to do. I mean, and you can get involved personally. You can. There's the Tucson Museum of Art is downtown for the most part. There's the Arizona State Museum on the campus of the University of Arizona. There's a Museum of Photography on the same campus.
Yeah, it does sound robust.
Well, there's just so many things to do here. And then there's kind of there educational things that the university offers. There's never, I don't think you can go a month without having something to do. And this isn't theater and it's not museum, but Tucson has one of the, I'd say, in the top three or four book festivals. It's coming up the first weekend of March. It's on the University of Arizona campus. They literally invite hundreds of authors from fiction, nonfiction, children's books. There's sometimes panel discussions. It was in probably maybe 3 years ago at the book festival. Jim Obergefell was here as part of a panel discussion. And wow. If I'm correct, Love Wins was the name of the book that he had written at the time. And so he was signing, and it's a wonderful event. And they have probably thousands of volunteers. So there's a volunteer opportunity for everyone here. There's the Gem and Mineral Show that's going on right now. People come from all over the place to see that. So there are different events. And again, it's tailored around the weather here, Mark, right, as it is in Phoenix. And they have street fairs, but a lot happens in January, February, March, April, and then in the fall.
And it's getting a little warm in April.
It doesn't stop the theater and it doesn't stop the indoor events, but it's pretty uncomfortable if you have those types of events
outdoors
in June or July. So, yeah. But yeah, plenty to do here.
Sounds great. How about the food scene? So I love restaurants. I love trying different new types of cuisine. Does Tucson have its share of restaurants and other than typical Mexican restaurants?
It does, but it's not going to compete with Phoenix. We have some great restaurants. And I think all of us have favorites that we can kind of keep going back to. I mean, there's plenty of ethnic restaurants here that are not Mexican. I mean, one of our favorites is a Mediterranean/Lebanese restaurant. And we don't eat chain restaurants. I mean, generally, I mean, we look for, even when we vacation in other places, we look for places the locals eat and little mom and pops. And we certainly have a lot of those. And I'll plug a couple people here. There's a woman who was just reached the, I guess she's a semifinalist for a James Beard Award for Southwest U.S. And she owns and operates a vegan and vegetarian restaurant. It's wonderful. So I'm thrilled for her. And then there's a gentleman here who he's all about bread and not just baking, but understanding the science. And he actually was a recipient of a James Beard Award last year. So,
wow, that's my weakness, bread.
And it's amazing. And I don't understand all the grains and the science behind it, although I did bake a lot during the pandemic. But yeah, I mean, you're not going to compete with a larger city, but we certainly have a diverse restaurant scene. And I think there's plenty to appeal to the masses.
For some reason, I don't picture Tucson as having that many fast food restaurants, like chain restaurants.
Well, they have some. They have some.
I guess they do.
They have some. There are, as you probably have in, well, I know you do in Phoenix, yeah, as well as other cities. I mean, there are restaurant groups that operate multiple restaurants and with different venues and themes and cuisine. So we have that as well.
Yeah.
However, I won't be disappointed if someone from our listening audience decides to move here and opens an Italian market, because I'm half Italian and it's the one thing that I miss. I feel like we need that market here in Tucson. So whoever's listening, please move here and open an Italian market for Jeff.
Yes, sounds good. How about the traffic situation? Is there traffic in Tucson? Does it get heavy? And you need a car, correct? Just like you would need one in Phoenix.
You do. Yeah. Unless you are downtown, there's been a renaissance in downtown Tucson in terms of building both apartments, hotels, and I know people who have kind of chucked it off, you will, and maybe even just for a temporary period of time where they just wanted to see what it was like to live downtown. So in that case, there's plenty of places to feed your interest level and not have a car. But if you want to go anywhere else, and we can talk about the streetcar, but if you want to go other places, now it's not known as a walkable city per se. So I would say you would need a car to go most places. But we don't have traffic jams here. And it's the one thing that I would say, if I had to pinpoint something that I would change here, is that we don't really have a robust road infrastructure. We have I-10, which bisects the city, and that's it. Everything else is streets and streetlights, and as opposed to where you live, Mark, I mean, you have all kinds of loops going around Phoenix, and it's one thing that Tucson does not have. I believe, from what I heard since we've been here, is that's how it was designed, and there's enough kind of political people or maybe planning people who just don't want to make that change. And it wouldn't be easy at this point, given the population and the existing structures. But yeah, we don't have that much traffic. I mean, it does increase during the winter when we have an influx of snowbirds, but it's not like a major city and it's not difficult to get around.
Tucson, we parked our car in a parking lot downtown and just walked around for the rest of the day. We got to I think right by the university as well. So we kind of covered some area, and it was all walkable, pretty much walkable where we were.
Sure.
And yeah, that's really the only part. We just saw probably a small part of Tucson in that fact. So
You would miss, people who visit here or plan to visit here. And one thing we didn't talk about is kind of nature but we have, the Desert Museum, we have the Botanical Gardens, we have another one garden area called Tohono O'Chul. I mean, if you want to venture out to any of those places, I mean, you absolutely will have to have a car, but they're worthwhile destinations to see, certainly.
Absolutely. Yeah. The Botanical Gardens out here in Arizona, they're a lot different than what we had back east. So Desert Botanical Gardens is quite beautiful in itself.
Yes, yeah, our topography is much different. And
yes,
I like to garden, so anyone can reach out to me if they have questions. But it was a whole new learning experience compared to living in Pennsylvania.
Does your botanical gardens, do they do like shows?
They do.
Like we had like the Chihuly glass.
Yeah, they did. Both the Botanical Garden and Tohono O'Chul, I believe, did a light show during the holidays. Yeah. And then they both do art exhibits and all kinds of other things during the year.
Again, it'll keep me busy.
It's a fun place to live.
Let's talk about crime. So does Tucson have a crime issue? You know, all around the U.S. there is a crime issue, but as far as anything different than any other medium-sized city?
No. I mean, obviously we have crime. And the crime, I don't want to talk about specific areas because it's the same in every city. So there are geographies of cities where crime is higher, and it's no different here.
Okay, so most of the crime is like petty theft or home invasion, you would say, like break-ins?
Yeah, I mean, Yeah, I've never really looked at the statistics, Mark, to see how they're, what group, what kind of areas they break that down into. But I mean, some more serious than that too, but I think that's probably infrequent.
So you would say you feel safe walking your dog, or if I were walking my dog outside at midnight, I would feel safe. I don't, of course, you have to be aware of where you are.
I do. And a lot of people would have the same answer. Some people may have a different answer. It just depends on
where they live.
Okay. And one of the things that we didn't talk about, and I want to make sure I'm not jumping ahead, but Tucson is extremely well known as a cycling city. And in recent years, they finished the building of a loop, and it's a 131-mile loop, carless, so no car traffic, for walkers and cyclists around the city. And I mention it, and it's because, I mean, since we've been here, I mean, it's sad because I guess, and I can't speak for serious cyclists, but I don't think they prefer to ride on the loop. They prefer to ride on streets. And we have bike lanes, but sadly, it just seems to me an inordinate number of accidents that drivers are either not paying attention or unfortunately inebriated and hit cyclists and kill cyclists, and you can see that by the white bikes that are built into the location where someone passed away as a result of it. But I'm sure it's an exception because it's probably a training area for cyclists as well. I mean, I really love it when I see like 10 cyclists together, but you have to be very careful. But the loop really is a wonderful addition to the city because people that are doing it socially and just want to have a place to go and bike, it's available. In some areas of the city, it runs right behind homes. In other areas, there are parking lots to gain access to it. So
it's a huge loop, over 100 miles.
Yes. Wow.
And so is it like two lanes for biking,
one
each way?
Uh-huh.
And then is there like a walking in the middle?
I don't know that they have it designated as such, but I think they actually have a painted line down the middle. So it's directional, Mark. So, you know, each direction. And then I guess you're just watching out for walkers and so forth.
So you don't get run over. That's great. That's great. We need something like that here. We do have bike lanes here, but not a substantial special made loop, I don't think.
I think because of our Phoenix is more flat than Tucson. And there is a place here called Mount Lemmon, and it's about 8,000 feet above sea level. And so they joke that you can be in Canada and Mexico in an hour, because when you go from the top of the mountain to the valley floor, it does take about an hour to drive, but it's a wonderful drive. And there's a ski slope up there, and they're skiing right now. Because
I was going to say, you can get cool up there.
When we have moisture, I mean, we can, from our house, we can see snow up on the mountain, which is the best place to see it is up there and not,
right. not down here.
But it's so many people who visit go up to Mount Lemmon, but there are plenty of cyclists that are going up that mountain, and
I don't know how they
just look at them and think, I couldn't do that. But anyway, the beauty of having that is that they can do training here. So
that's wonderful. Excellent. Excellent. Tell us about the healthcare. Is the healthcare what's it like? Are there enough physicians that could accommodate the population?
Yes, but just being honest about that, I mean, we have, I believe we have about five hospitals. that are spread around. Two of them are part of the same network, and there's very good hospitals and healthcare here in terms of that. There are lots of specialists, and what I found, and I don't think it's isolated to Tucson, is that it's harder to find a primary care physician who will not leave. And I say that because when we left Pennsylvania, our primary care physician left the practice to go to the VA hospital. And when we came here, my first PCP left to go to a VA in Michigan. The second one left to go to the VA here. The third one, I don't know where he went. And so I'm on my fourth PCP in 8.5 years. And that kind of gets frustrating. I attribute it not as so much to Tucson as I do to what has happened to medicine and to
the healthcare system itself.
Yeah, I think that we've seen it here. I mean, docs, if they're at the age where some of them just leave, and they just leave medicine because they're so frustrated with the whole process.
Yep.
These practices, both here, back in Pennsylvania, they're being bought by non-medical entities as a for-profit business. And then they're taking the intimacy out of that we always like, where you had a physician that you could just sit and talk to, and they're losing it because they're being pressured to spend less time with every patient, or they're taking their call center out of the country. And all those frustrations, I'm sure, are not isolated to just us here. But overall, I would say the level of healthcare is good. But I would also say it's better when you look at specialists and you go to a specialist versus a PCP.
Then I often wonder, we've grown up having PCPs, having our family doctor, quote unquote. I mean, there's so much, they really refer you to a specialist if something's wrong. So why is it even necessary to have a PCP? It's nice. You can go to somebody that maybe you don't know what it is, and they can kind of like figure it out. But sometimes I'm like, if he's just going to refer me to another specialist, why do I even need him?
So. Well, I believe you do, because it's the first step before you have to go see someone else. And I don't know what the age group is of our listening audience, but I'll share that I went on Medicare about 15 months ago. So part of the PCP role, too, is that they will do an annual Medicare checkup. They'll mm-hmm. order general labs. And for people that are healthy, Mark, I mean, that don't have to go to a specialist, I mean, the PCP is a good solution for that.
That's true.
but it can get frustrating. I've found, though, happily, that the PCP now that I've had for 4 years, that they have brought in scribes, which has eliminated that kind of dreadful situation where you walk into the exam room and your doc is sitting in the corner at a laptop and might make eye contact or may not. And they're asking you questions and they're taking their own notes. So that has, in my case, that has been eliminated somewhat by them hiring these scribes who come in at the same time and they take all the notes. So you can sit there and have a very good and thorough conversation with your physician.
Yeah, that's important. That's definitely important. Knock on wood for me, I guess, since we moved here, I've had the same PCP.
Okay, for you.
So, yeah.
I wish I could say the same.
Yeah, I hope he stays around. Okay. So we covered healthcare. Is there anything in Tucson that you don't have that you might have had in Pennsylvania or elsewhere that you miss?
Not in Pennsylvania. I think I'm going to be repetitive and just say, and this is not comparing it to where we lived in Pennsylvania. I'm just making a general comment that, again, I think that it's not for someone who wants to move somewhere where they can just not get in their car. Tucson is generally not going to be that place. I mean, it's right. It's not a walkable. It's a walkable downtown, but if you have interest in doing other things, you're going to have to use a car.
Right. If you want to do
that part, it's not going to satisfy someone who wants that. And again, I don't know. I think that's it. I mean, does the fact that we only have one highway or freeway that runs through, does that get frustrating? I don't know. We sort of laugh about and say everything is 30 minutes from our house.
Right.
And we just get used to it. But we don't have a lot of traffic. So it's not like you're sitting in bumper to bumper traffic here. I mean,
how long does it take you to the downtown from you?
Probably 20,
I was gonna 25, say 30 minutes.
25 minutes.
Okay.
If I'm going to the east side of Tucson, it may take 35 minutes, but generally almost everything is within a half an hour.
And the airport?
The airport has easy access. I mean, you can look at that as a pro and a con. It's the best size airport in terms of getting in and out easily. For us, it's about a 40-minute drive. If you're on the east side of Tucson, it's probably 15 minutes or 10 minutes. But it's one of those airports that a smaller city has the benefit of, because you're not going to get there and find 2-hour lines for security for the most of the time. They call it an international airport, but the downside is, you know, where you are, Mark, in Phoenix, you can fly almost anywhere from Phoenix because it's such a large airport. Here, for those people who are listening and interested, you can fly direct to Atlanta, you can go to Dallas, you can go to Minneapolis, you can go to Chicago, and then you can go to all the major cities on the West Coast, Denver, San Francisco, Los Angeles, Seattle. But east, I think probably Atlanta is the furthest direct flight, and then if you look at Midwest, Chicago, upper Midwest, so... So you have nonstops to those places, or you can drive to Phoenix, or you can take transportation because of shuttle service that goes to the Phoenix airport from here, which I have used and plenty of our visitors have used. So it can be pretty easy to do that as well.
So my husband and I applied for global entry a few months ago. Phoenix had ridiculous amount of wait. It was like 8 months to get to an interview to see if you can get it. And we can get in 2 days, we got it in Tucson. So I think it was only 2 days because I couldn't make it on the next day. So you can get right in. We got in. Our appointment was smack on time, beautiful, got out. We're done.
Bob and I have it too. So, and of course we went here, but for guests listening, global entry's just, it's wonderful to have. And
yep,
that's where we did it.
It'll be the first time I'll use it this coming year. This year.
Oh, that's right. For sure.
Yeah. Going on my little Spain trip. So you mentioned the streetcar also. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Where does that run? Just downtown?
I don't know the number of stops, but yes, it's definitely downtown. It runs to University. It runs east to a place called Mercado in Augustine. So it has limited routes, but it primarily downtown. I don't know what their plans are to expand it, but it was a terrific addition to the city and transportation and students, and it's easy to use and easy to get around to those places. I mean, we would never have access to it up here, but some people will actually drive to one of their stops where it has parking and then just take it to
go downtown.
So, because parking downtown is limited. I mean, there are parking garages, but if you're going to a to the theater on campus, you know, you're going to have limited parking, and lots of other people are going to be going to the same event. So,
is it a covered rail or is it open like a San Francisco streetcar?
No, it's definitely covered.
Covered. Yeah. So it's sort of like our light rail.
Yeah, and it's relatively like new. I think it probably opened, and maybe not every route, but around the time we moved here in 2014.
Yeah, because I have the light rail right across from my condo. Easy peasy. I hop on there to the airport. Don't have to drive to the airport. Leave your car park. We can go downtown. We go to a venue downtown. Hop on the light rail. Have a couple of drinks. Come back. You don't have to worry about driving. Yeah,
that's perfect.
It's great. So in wrapping up, Jeff, what would you say to our audience if they're thinking about relocating to Tucson?
Call me. No, I would say we moved maybe not on a whim, but we did have in mind if we didn't like it, we'd give it 18 months and we'd go somewhere else. But I don't know what it was, Mark. I was still working for a year and a half after we moved here, and I was traveling back and forth to the East Coast almost every week. So I was flying, and the first time I had to fly home, if you will, it felt like home. And that sounds odd, but it's the honest truth. And we have never regretted moving here. But I also have to say, we were so ready to leave where we lived. And so maybe that was part of it. But again, we didn't ask ourselves all these questions that you have been so gracious and helpful to kind of spearhead this initiative. And everyone listening, thank Mark and buy him coffee, and because he's doing this out of the goodness of his heart. And it's wonderful. And Mark, it's not just wonderful for all these people that are listening and Where Do Gays Retire, but I was just sharing it with what you do with someone else, because they had a friend who was thinking about moving here. And it doesn't matter whether we're talking about the LGBTQ community.
Right.
We're covering so much that would be helpful to anyone who wants to move. So thank you for what you're doing.
Thank you. Anybody could listen to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say it was perfect for us. It really is. I mean, from the people that live here, friendly, how many friends we've, it's just an ideal place to live. And so I would just say, if anyone is listening, you can certainly reach out to me on social media. And
where can we find you?
Well, Mark already shared my business website and email address, but I'm on Facebook a lot, and I'm on LinkedIn a lot, and I have an Instagram account, although I don't use that very often. So,
yeah, you can give your website address again if you have that.
Yep,
it's, or email.
It's my website is JEFF and the letter S is in Sam dot Long Realty, LONGREALTY.com. And my email address is jeffs@longrealty.com. So jeffs@longrealty.com. So it's pretty easy to find me, and you can private message me or just send a note on Facebook or through LinkedIn if you happen to use that as well.
Or me, and I'll relay it.
Exactly.
Yep. You can always go on to our website also at www.wheredogaysretire.com. That's where my coffee cup is available for any donations. And there is actually a spot under each posted podcast, because all of the podcasts are posted there, besides on Spotify. They're on Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Amazon Music Podcasts. It's everywhere. It's pretty much everywhere. But they're all housed on my website. So if you go to my website and you click on that particular link to that individual podcast, you could also write some notes to me that I get. So I get them in email forms as well. So, yeah,
Well, you've been a gracious host, Mark, and thank you so much for inviting me and doing this on your time.
Thank you. And you've been a great guest. And thank you so much for taking your precious time out of the day and sharing your story with our audience. We love it. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Have a great day, Jeff. We'll talk soon.
You too, Mark.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.